Hi, I'm Alex. I'm a compulsive overeater. Thank you, Carol, for asking me to lead today. I'm grateful to have an opportunity to do some service and to be asked to do some service because I'm just a deeply selfish, deeply self-centered person, and I just want to focus on my little plans and designs. And it's very important for me to pull out of that and try to do something that might be useful to some other human being on Earth. I have been a part of a member of OA since 2016. I've been abstinent 6 3/4 or so years. I didn't show up to OA until I was 49. I'm 57 now. And I had a problem. Or rather, I thought I had for my entire life, I have had a serious challenge and issue with food. And I have dealt really mightily against compulsion to eat and with a lot of body issues. And during those nearly 5 decades, I just thought that my problem was food. And it wasn't until I came to this program and I met all of you and I started to come to meetings and listen, did I learn that food was not my problem, that food was my solution to my problem. That my problem is that I have a spiritual hole inside of me. And I am forever attempting to fill this hole with food and applause. And my experience is there's never nearly enough of in either of those things to make me feel filled up. It's an entire history. My entire life is about attempting to find external things to make me feel better and to fix my internal thing. And that's been my story from when I was a kid. I grew up in a loving home, but it was a pretty unpredictable home, an explosive home. My father was a great guy, but he was unpredictable and he was explosive. And I became I adapted with a certain strategy that I would read the temperature of a room when I came into it to see what was going on and how could I fit into this room and how can I avoid running afoul of anyone in it? And that kind of life, especially as a little kid, creates a lot of anxiety as I walk in and try to figure out if I'm going to be safe today or if I'm not. And with all of that anxiety, I really needed to comfort myself. And the way I found to comfort myself was with food, particularly sugar and flour, and most particularly the combination of sugar and flour. Those two coming together allowed me to do what Bill Wilson talks about in the Big Book, and I can just chase oblivion. I ate the way he describes, the way he drank. I'm just trying to get to a place where I'm not feeling anything. The truth of the matter is, I don't think I really ever learned how to have feelings. Like I don't like it's not okay. Like I'm allowed. I want to feel good, or I want to feel nothing. That's basically the gamut that I have allowed myself. And in my home, the way I grew up, it was okay for me to show anger because there was a lot of anger being shown in the home. And it's okay to show joy because people can laugh and everything, but I was not it was not okay to show any kind of vulnerability. And it was not okay to show anything that was a weakness. And very soon in my childhood, I sort of started to see weight gain as a weakness. And specifically because I was being mocked over it. My nickname growing up was Fat Boy. And in the neighborhood, that's what everyone called me. And I started built this idea that I was this shameful thing. And it's not okay for me to show anybody that I feel all this. So I developed a kind of exterior character that, if I'm being totally honest, I'm still playing that character today. I've developed that character, maybe has developed somewhat. Other storylines have been written, but I am still presenting a character that I believe will avoid your disapproval because I'm terrified of all of you. I'm worried that all of you can see into me, that you can see the real me, that I'm just this terrified little kid, and that I'm not worth anything, and that I don't have anything of value to offer. And as I said, this has been an anxiety that I've carried with me a long, long time. And I have had to manage that anxiety with, you know, unfortunately, as a lot of, I'm a member of five different programs. So I have used lots of external circumstances, external things to try to this fear anxiety. But food was always the main one. Because food obviously is started from when I was youngest. It was the thing that I wouldn't have to be in any kind of danger to get, but it was still incredibly secret. Like my eating, like nobody to this day, no one ever saw my real eating, any of my real eating. That always happened in secret. And what really happens for me is because I'm so afraid of you, I think that I have to find ways to control you, control what your reaction to me is going to be. And so I spend a lot of time in my head as a result, trying to be prepared for your disapproval, trying to be prepared for circumstances. And so what I do is I end up going into what I call the bunker of my head. I go into the bunker. And I shut the gate and I lock it and I bring down the portcullis and I bring down the shades. And while I'm in the bunker where no one can see me, I can indulge in the illusion that I have control. I can relitigate old battles with people. And this time I say all the right shit and I win all those fights, you know. Or you know, I can go into the future and try to plan how I'm going to do this. And I can have all these imaginary conflicts with people that I haven't even, nothing's even started yet. And I'm already having an imaginary fight with them, you know. Or I could also be in the bunker and, you know, throw celebratory parades to my greatness. You know, I could just be in there. I'm basically just lost in my head. The thing about the bunker is when I'm in there, and I don't always know that I'm there. Sometimes I can go into the bunker and hours can go by before I even remember and realize that I'm in there. But the thing about it is, if I'm in the bunker, that means I'm either in the past, which is about shame and regret, or I'm in the future, which is about fear and anxiety. The only place I'm not in when I'm in the bunker is the present, which ironically is the only place I can actually experience my life. What's also important is that my higher power is not in the bunker because my higher power doesn't live in the past. It doesn't live in the future. My higher power is in the here and now. And so I don't have access. I'm cutting myself off from my higher power. I'm cutting myself off from you intentionally because of my fear of you. I'm cutting myself off from everything that I'm so terrified of. And when I do that, I'm not of any service to anyone. I'm not of any use to anyone. I'm not of any use to myself. I certainly am not used to my higher power. And the number one thing that pulls me out of the bunker is service. Because again, I'm so afraid. My fear is all self-centered. The reason I'm so self-centered is I used to think before I came to this program that self-centered meant I'm so conceited. I'm just so in love with myself. I can't stop thinking about myself. For me, it's the self-centeredness is fear. I'm trying to get myself right. I'm trying to get myself all prepared so that I can be above your criticism, so I can be above your disapproval. I'm not even really chasing your approval. I'm trying to avoid your disapproval because I got so much of it. I got so much disapproval. I have learned to tell myself this story that I am a shameful thing, that I'm not worthy of love. That's why I am so grateful, and I think that this room, these rooms like this, are so beautiful because I walked into one of these rooms and I sat down, and I didn't believe I sat down, I crossed my arms and my legs, and I was just sitting there, and I'm gonna go through this, but when I first showed up, I was a committed atheist. I spent my entire adult life not just, not believing in God, but identifying myself as a person that doesn't believe in God. I took joy in mocking people that chose to rely on faith rather than, faith people who would talk about things like, let go and let God. I would just enjoy like making fun. Now I wear a bracelet that says "Let go and let God." So, fuck me, We don't know what we don't know how to predict what's going to happen in life. But I came these rooms, and the main thing that I saw happen in that room happened to me, happened to other people I watched, is that people sat down and said, shared the one thing that they're most afraid of. The thing that they're most ashamed of, the thing that they would never want to tell anybody, they said it out loud. And other people in the room said, yeah, me too. That I didn't, the thing that I was so afraid of, that you would say, you would just shun me if you knew. Did I lose you? Am I back?
You're back.
You're back.
Okay. Sorry about that. So, I was in OA for about a year and a half, and I was just doing what we call OA my way. I was going to the meetings. I was talking a good game. I'm taking service positions a little here and there, but I didn't ask anybody to sponsor me, and I was not working the steps. I chose what I now call this bullshit abstinence that I chose, which was, and in those days, I believed my only problem was bread. So I said, if I don't eat bread, I'll just be fine. So I would, even though that meant that, I'd eat three Snickers bars for lunch, and I thought that was an abstinent lunch. But I went on this way, and until about a year and a half in, when one of my closest friends and my closest creative collaborator at the time went to bed one night and he just didn't wake up. He was 54. And his death was so shocking, and so it rocked me so much that my so-called abstinence just snapped like a twig. And I ran to the food. I shares been that long that I could deny that I saw what was happening. I was running to the food to stop feeling this feeling that I didn't want to have. I was having this terrible grief, and I didn't want to feel it. And I just ran to the food to try to stop it. As I said, I would go off most often to sugar and flour, but I was also a volume eater. I like to really pack myself up, just, pack every, eat until I felt overstuffed somehow, like I was a FedEx box and I'm trying to pack it up with, material to keep the thing inside safe. The one thing I did do right in that thing is that I kept coming back. And I went back to that meeting one day and I shared what I just shared with you. And afterwards, it was the first, honestly, after a year and a half, it was the first really honest share that I'd ever had. And after the meeting, a woman came up to me who I will forever be grateful to. And she said, if you want to feel better, go to a meeting. But if you want to get better, work the steps. And for whatever reason, I was able to hear that. And I remembered that meant that was going to mean having to ask someone to sponsor me. And that to me, in my mind, was a non-starter. It is not going to be okay. I had too much male ego about me. I was going to not be able to ask somebody to help. I certainly wasn't going to walk up to, be me, a grown ass man, and walk up to another grown ass man and say, apple fritters have beaten me and I need some help, you know? But I went to this meeting, another meeting that I had gone to before because I'd met a guy there who had introduced himself after when I identified as a newcomer. And I'd never forgotten him. And I said to myself, if he is at this meeting, I'm going to ask him to sponsor me. And I went to the meeting, I showed up, and not only was he at the meeting, he was the lead speaker. I was far, far from being able to see that as what I see it now as a God shot, but that's what it was. After the meeting, I went up to him and I was just terrified. I was really, honestly, I was sweating it the whole meeting. I was so nervous to go up to ask him if he would sponsor me. But I did it. And that moment was the beginning of my recovery. And the reason it was the beginning is because that was my first real surrender. Surrendering what I think I know, surrendering what I'm safe with, surrendering the fact that I have any control. You know, we talk very much in this program about turning our will and our life over to the care of God. And so much of it has to do with saying, can I let go of control? I've come to learn in these rooms that I'm not really turning over my control. I'm turning over my illusion of control because I don't have control. I never have had control. It's the illusion that I'm addicted to. It's the illusion that I have to hang on to. But that's what I surrendered that day. And I worked with this guy and he took me through the steps, even the third step, which I put both feet on the brakes when we got to the third step because I was just really resistant to the idea of God. I told him that from the outset. I said, hey, I don't know how I'm going to do this third step stuff. And he said, relax, you haven't even done first step yet. Let's see how we're going to get there. I was resistant. He was so kind and gentle with me. He had me do all the exercises, like if you, I'm sure you've heard, writing, thank you, 2 minutes, writing, a want ad for God. Basically, you make up that lists everything you want in higher power. And I was wanting to do it, but I just couldn't find the willingness. And so I went back to another meeting where there's a guy that I had commiserated with many times when it came to higher power. In fact, he says, he still says to this day, he says, I was an atheist before I came to OA. I'm an atheist since I came to OA, and my higher power is an atheist. And I talked to him and I said, you know, man, I just don't know if I can believe in a power greater than myself. And he said, well, do you believe in gravity? Do you believe gravity is a power greater than yourself? Because if you don't, I'd like to invite you to step off of this building and see what happens. And I share that story often, and it's kind of silly. And but the fact is that it's what I needed in that moment because, obviously, gravity is a real power that is greater than myself that I can't control. Just like the tide, just like the moon and the sun. If that's true, then what else do I not have control over? Maybe everything that I think I have control over, like other people's opinions and my anything, maybe all that is I'm wrong about too. And when that happened, the door of willingness opened just this much. And as the big book tells us, that's all I needed. From that point started this work. And that was 6 years ago, 6 and a half years ago. I since have been using up an image of a higher power that has been really useful to me lately. I've been thinking that maybe I need to adjust this so it becomes an image that's more about self-compassion, which I need more of. I'll wrap up. I'll just want to say that my experience in this program is surrender is the only play. If there are any newcomers in this meeting, I'll tell you what a long-timer told me when I first showed up. She looked at us and she said, "The war is over and you lost. It's time to surrender." Thanks for letting me share.